Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Valley Nordic. I'm Chander in Palo Alto.
Hi, this is Arne in Oslo.
And also welcome to the new users, or sorry, not users, first-time listeners to Valley Nordic, which is a podcast about culture, technology, and business about startups from two perspectives, Silicon Valley and Nordics, and also from an entrepreneurial point of view and a venture capitalist point of view. I am representing the entrepreneurs and Arne is representing the venture capitalists in Norway or Nordics. So today, and first we want to apologize to listeners. We missed the last two or three episodes. It's for a family situation in my case, and that's why we missed it. But we'll be back on every 2 weeks starting today. So today's topic is startup boards, which is, I think, not a topic discussed very often. And there aren't like straight forward rules to it. Most of the literature out there is for public boards, but startup boards, I think, are different, just the nature of the startup. So we thought we'd cover that today. When you're starting a company, what are the, you know, how do you construct a board, and what do you have to think about? So we'll cover four things today. One is, why do you need a board? Second is, you know, what are the different types of board members? Third, the role of the board. And fourth is common mistakes board members make and entrepreneurs or CEOs make when working with the board. How does that sound, Arne?
Sounds good.
Okay, let's start with why. Why do startups need a board?
Well, most startups are corporations, inks, or limited liability companies, and these are sort of legal constructs. And it's the board is the legal construct to manage that company. So it's actually generally required by law to manage that company. So it's kind of a legal role in managing the business and affairs of that business. And that's sort of the legal angle to it. And then, of course, it also is a practical angle to how you operate your company.
Yeah. So from the practical perspective, why do you need one?
Well, that's where you take the biggest strategic decisions of the company. That includes hire and fire a CEO of a company. Now, in the startup, often that's the founder, and that's not, you know, it's often pre-hired and generally not a good thing if he's fired. But anyway, that sorts under the board, as well as president and maybe other officers that run the company day to day. And the board is also involved in making decisions of ownership, strategy, financing, transactions, and so forth. And the board has, you know, the formal, what's called the fiduciary duty of the company, which essentially means that the board is the representatives of the shareholders owning the company.
Yeah. So thanks, Arne. So I think the, like you said, board represents the equity shareholders, or sorry, equity holders of the company. And it's like the role is basically, I think, twofold. One is governance, that you're following the law and you are doing everything in a proper way. Second is managing risk, where, you know, you're working to increase the upside and also minimizing the downside, protecting the assets, et cetera, of the company. But I think the role changes on the stage company's in. So in early stages, you know, you are just starting out the company, you have seed funding, you know, everything's about getting the product to the market. I don't know if, like, how much role the board plays there. Generally, it's the at that stage, it's the founder or founders are on the board and not any external people, unless, you know, founders want them to be there. But generally, it's building the product. Then you come to launching the product, you get Series A funding, then, you know, somebody like Arna would join your board. Generally, the investors who invest join the board, not only to make sure their money is put to well use, also to make sure that the company succeeds. You want to add to that, Arne? Did I miss anything?
Yeah, no, I think that's correct. I think also at some point you have independents joining the board. Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, even if the board is tasked with managing the business and affairs of the company, from a legal perspective, the role has, the board is a strategic tool. It's not the tactical day-to-day running of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So even the definition legally might confuse some people. And I would also say in the early days of the company, when typically founders, they're only founders on the board, if that's the case, this most companies don't distinguish their roles very clearly. Mm-hmm. But there is a difference. What is the board's business and the day-to-day running of the company? And the final thing I would say is that if you look at it from a Nordic perspective, typically you fill up the board. This is not always the case, but there's a tendency to establish a formal board earlier and get externals in and distinguish between the founding team and the board mm-hmm. earlier. And that has clear advantages, but it also has the disadvantage that you maybe formalize things too early and the board inflates too fast.
Mm. So Arne is on around 10 boards in Norway. So he has much more experience in this than I do. I've been...
Actually, 9 in Norway and 1 in the US.
Oh, nice. So you can speak to both. And, you know, I've been on the board of my own startup and I've been, you know, in senior positions in other startups where you interact with the board. And I've been on advisory boards, many of them. Let's talk about advisory boards for a second. So in the US, we, you know, do... lot of, you know, you need a lot of help when you are creating a startup or building a startup. So generally, you get people for advice or, and you create an advisory board, which is not the formal board of directors, where you give them equity and they help you in building the company. So is it the same in Norway and Nordics, or advisory board is more of a US thing?
No, I would say it's the same, but there are nuances, and the nuance I gave around, you know, maybe the board fills up earlier and established slightly earlier in the Nordics. I would also say there's a tendency maybe to use advisory boards slightly less, but instead have people who provide that type of advice join the formal board. And that's one of the reasons why it tends to fill up slightly faster over here. Although things also tend to follow the US a little bit, and the difference is maybe less than it used to be. But I think the big difference between an advisory board and a board is that the advisory board is pure objective is to provide advice around specific topics. and tend to be industry experts, but have no authority to make decisions on behalf of the company, and thus has less legal formalities associated with it.
Yeah. Arne, why do you think in Norway it happens faster that the board gets constructed and there are more board members?
Well, I think, you know, the startup world has evolved greatly everywhere. But if you go back, you know, 40 years, both in the US and in Norway, the view was that a startup or a small company was just a smaller version of a large company, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of replicated the structures. Mm-hmm. Now the startup world has evolved into a much more dynamic organization, iterating to move fast, right? Mm-hmm. And that requires a different structure. And I think it's moved in, and that also means that you want to have a small board and you know, only extend it and fill it up as you grow the company. Mm-hmm. And that is a development that has happened everywhere, Norway, Sweden, US, everywhere. But I just think there's a slightly more persistence to building a board that's a little bit more like a big company board in a smaller company. So I'd say it's a nuance, not a major thing. The other thing is that the history of Europe versus the US is that traditionally there has been a bigger divide in the roles of who runs, who makes decisions on the board and who makes decisions on an everyday basis. So like in mature company tradition in Europe, it's good governance to not have operators on the board and therefore have an independent board from the day-to-day operations. That is not so in large US companies where the CEO tends to be a board member and so forth. And I think that also flavors a little bit of making the board more independent earlier. But as I said, a nuance, and the main startup development also happens in the Nordics. Mm-hmm.
So you had, like, let's say you create a startup and you would have a board where you are the CEO and you wouldn't be on the board?
No, that would be very unusual that the founder CEO is not on the board. Yeah. But it would be likely that, so in the US, say you do a seed round in the US, that would likely be, or in many cases would be a safe note where investors don't go on the board and it stays a founder only board. And seed equity, that round would likely be a seed equity round, or in many cases a seed equity round in the Nordics, and one investor would join the board. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, seed equity rounds happen in the US as well, but also the tradition would maybe be to have an independent already at that stage. Mm-hmm. So that sort of progression to a mature board possibly happens somewhat earlier. Mm-hmm. So both larger and more independent board marginally earlier, I would say, on average.
Yeah. So I think we should mention there are, you know, like mainly three types of board members. One is, you know, the management of the company. So that's generally the founders. Second is investors.
Called inside board members.
Yeah. Then the investors who invest money, like Arne, that's generally VCs. And third is the independents. So these are mainly the three types of board members. So when, like, let's say you and I start a company, Arne, today, when should we think about, like, when you start, it's the founders are on the board, then you get the VC money, then they come to the board as part of the deal. And then you get independent. Generally, that's the route, but it could be, you know, the founders independent, then VC. That also happens. Well, when should founders, let's say you and I start a company today, when should we think of getting independence on the board?
Well, you know, I would say the sort of the optimal route is kind of, let's say you do your first equity round, maybe that's a seed equity round or something like that. I would say the ideal situation is then to get one. Once you do your first equity round with professional investors, you should have one of the investor. The lead investor preferably should join at that stage. So that if you do a safe, that's the Series A. If you do a seed equity round, that would be the seed round. And I think in your second equity round, typically you would get, you know, the lead of the new round as another investor representative on board. And I think when you have two investor representatives on board, that would also probably be the time where you want to get an independent on board.
And what's the, so what I, you know, have learned in getting on boards or thinking about mainly advisory boards is it's basically three C's you look for when you get somebody on the advisory board. That's, you know, capital, somebody who can help you raise capital, somebody who has connections, so you can expand to new markets, get the deals, hire people, etc. And third is competence. They may have, you know, area of competence that, you know, you don't and you need that. Let's say the startup, like forever, we had Javi Mandel because we needed competence, somebody who understands the entertainment industry well. So it's, you know, connections, capital, competence. So for the board of directors, is it any different, Arne, when you think of getting independent board member?
Not really. I would point out, I think your C's work, although I haven't really thought about them. You shouldn't think of them independently for that you have one person with competence and one with connection, because generally you don't want a dumbass with connections. You want to have somebody with competence and connections, right? So I think you should look at sort of the combination of whatever one person has, right? But I don't think the agenda is very different from a board. I think you should align resources that have strengths around the main strategic challenges of the company. But of course, strategic challenges can change very rapidly. And I don't think you want to change board members all that rapidly. You should probably think slightly long-term about it. And I think the other thing is that sometimes boards have difficult decisions, right? And there might be different... you know, when you're on the board, you have, you know, your fiduciary duties that I talked about before. And even if I represent a VC firm on the board, as a board member, I have a duty of the loyalty to the company, which means that I should think about company first and then my fund secondarily. And so should founders. But most people who come, you know, with a specific angle to... or a specific interest to the table have a hard time, you know, keeping these things completely straight, or there might simply be a conflict of interest, right? And I think this is the additional point of independence on the board, is that they can, you know, you cannot accuse them or suspect them of having the same conflict of interest, and it's very important that they have sound judgment. Because the company depends on them when the going gets tough, and there are different perspectives on a difficult issue.
This may be nuanced. You say they have to think about the company. I would say they have to think about the equity stakeholders or equity holders. because company could be doing fine and they could be serving the interest of the debt holders. That's not the board's job.
Well, you know, now we get into a very complicated discussion around governance and so forth, and what do you, who do you have to be loyal to? But in the traditional way of thinking about it, the job of a company is to create shareholder value, and that's the main job of the company, at least in the traditional view. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the legal definition of the fiduciary duty, you have four things under that. One is duty of care, which is essentially means you have to do your job properly. You have to read the papers and get involved, right? Meet for meetings and, you know, do the work essentially. Duty of loyalty is that your loyalty is to the company. And if the company's job is to create shareholder value, that duty of loyalty sort of to the company is the same as to the shareholders. But there are different views as to whether this should be balanced with creditors, employees, and the society at large. You also have the duty of disclosure, which is essentially that you have to, if there are things you know, you have to be frank about them and tell about them. And you also have the duty of confidentiality. So whatever happens in the boardroom stays in the boardroom. You should not write in the papers or tell your friends the tough discussions in the boardroom unless you have legal requirements to do so. Yeah. So there are a number of things going into this.
Say the third one again. I couldn't hear it. It's care, loyalty, and third is what?
Disclosure.
Disclosure. Okay. And fourth is confidentiality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the American terms for it, right? There are, you know, the law is different from country to country. The principles are the same, so yeah, to speak, but they might be formulated differently. Yeah. And particularly a Nordic perspective would be that, you know, your duty of loyalty is also to other stakeholders in a balanced shape, even if your job is to make money for shareholders. But it cannot be at the deep expense of someone else. And that this is a difficult balancing act, and people disagree on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wider discussion in the business world. What is the purpose of the company? Is it just serving the interest of the shareholders, or it's serving the interest of the stakeholders, which includes society,
employees, customers, creditors.
Creditors, etc. Yeah. So that's a bigger debate, and I think we have it's the Business Roundtable, which is the biggest lobbying group, I would say, in the US for businesses. They, a couple of years ago, changed their mission statement to include stakeholders, but I don't know if anything has come out of that. But it's a bigger debate, probably.
Yeah, and I don't think we should have it here. It's just that when you say it's the shareholders, I just want to point out there are multiple views on this, and I just don't want to have 100 phone calls from Nordic colleagues who say, have you not listened the last 40 years?
Yeah, but as a board member, so that people who are not familiar with this are clear, if you're joining a board or you're on the board, the official job is to maximize shareholder value. Now, and not, you know, put the interest of the debt holders above the interest of the shareholders or equity holders.
Yeah, and there's actually a somewhat interesting legal point in the US that I was not aware of, but your fiduciary duties are primarily to the common shareholders. Mm-hmm. And that is because preference shareholders are typically protected in other ways through agreements. And it's kind of a hybrid debt form because they get the money first. And the legal view is that they are A, professional, and secondarily protected by agreement. Mm-hmm. So as a board member, your loyalty are first and foremost with the common shareholders who do not have special rights and have less position to wield power through the boardroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very nuanced. You're right. It's to the common shareholders. In your experience being on these 10 boards, what's like generally startups have more than one founder. Generally, they're co-founders. Mm. So what works better, or you have preference if only the CEO joins the board or both co-founders or more than two co-founders join the board?
I would say that I've seen both work. I think in the US context, it tends to be so that that the board is founder heavy and has a majority for longer. Mm-hmm. And I think the trend is to want to have great founders and have them run their companies further simply because they move fast and are very ambitious and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it's very individual from company to company what works best. I think it tends to be in the Nordic setting that it's less founder heavy in numbers simply because this view that the board should be independent and that is good governance. Ultimately, I think the quality of the board comes down to the quality of the members and the balance of the board and alignment of interest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the, you know, public boards, I think the main, what I read and people who I know are on public company boards, my understanding is a lot of people understand their job as board members to be hire and fire the CEO. That may work in the, you know, public company, which has this structure, customers, employees. You can change the CEO, which is a highly risky thing, but you have this underlying thing. You're basically protecting the assets. But in the startup world, I mean, you fire the CEO who's a founder, the odds of that company surviving are really low.
Certainly in the early stages of the development. And if I put on my venture capitalist hat, our job is to find great founders, partner with them and back them and make them successful. Mm-hmm. So changing CEO is failure in itself. Mm-hmm. At least in the first few legs of the race.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not, even if it falls under the board, it's not by any means a good situation if it were to happen. Mm-hmm. So I think the startup board versus a public board. The startup board. A startup is generally a small organization that tends to be under-resourced. Mm-hmm. And if you have the right board members, they can add great value, even in a limited number of hours. And it gets to be super interesting strategic discussions. Mm-hmm. A good board in a startup can be a super inspiring place to be. And it's about solving very exciting strategic problems. A public board, I have not served on a public board, but from all I've heard and all the people I know who served on them, the company is for all practical purposes run by management. Mm-hmm. And the board becomes a legal compliance machine. And it's probably one of the most boring jobs in most circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends. If you have an activist investor joining the board, then I'm sure it's very interesting.
Possibly. But that's
I like the, as you know, I admire Buffett and Munger. So when you join Berkshire board, you have to buy Berkshire stock with your own money of, I forget how many hundreds of thousands of dollars to be on the board. And Buffett does that. So the incentives are aligned. You have to have significant equity in the company if you're on the board, so you do what's best for the equity holders in the company. But I don't, in other companies, you're basically granted the stock. You haven't invested your own capital. So I like the Buffett model for public companies, or Berkshire model.
Yeah. So obviously I've not served on the Berkshire board. I don't know how it is to be on the Berkshire board, but I would be very surprised if that's your usual public company board.
Yeah, it's not. That's why I'm giving it as an example. I think that's, I like that model.
Nor do I think the Tesla board is typical listed company board.
Actually, can you share, you actually know about this, all the conflicts of interest on the Tesla board? Why is it not a typical board?
No, I don't know all the details about it, but I mean, Tesla is essentially Elon's company, and he does what he pleases, right? Mm-hmm. And he's not, you know, your average Joe, nor do I think compliance is what he does best or is most focused on. And that's why I think it's a very different board.
There are a lot of, I think, conflicts of interest on that board related to Solar City, SpaceX, but I don't remember them in detail. But if I find an article, I can post it on the show notes.
There was a big stink when Tesla bought Solar City because the general view was that it was not in the Tesla shareholders' interest, and it was essentially a rescue mission for a company where Elon Musk was the primary shareholder.
And it was his cousin or brother or somebody family related who ran Solar City.
Yeah, and I believe Elon's brother is also on the board of Tesla.
Okay. So moving on to Earth, when you, on the boards you're on, like when do you expect the CEO to come to the board for decisions, advice, like, because, you know, the board is there to help the company succeed, but what are the things you want the CEOs to come to the board with? Because they can't come to you for, you know, every decision. What are the, let's say, top things, three things that all CEOs should come to the board for?
Well, I think funding, mm-hmm. Or acquisitions in general, major changes of direction in strategy, and budget. I think these are, and I think a good board has some sort of a governing document essentially saying, okay, what does the CEO have to have a decision from the board? Either, you know, some things are regulated by law and some should be regulated by the governing documents of the company. This should not be very complex stuff, but it should just be clear what sort of authorities are there and what are board issues. That said, I think a well-functioning board is made out of a very strong individual with strengths. They could be disease or something else. And I think that whilst these are not formal board decisions, I think it's great if the CEO or management use the board members in a more dynamic fashion, right? Solve problems. So more sort of, you know, there are the formal board things that we just talked about, but the boards also have, can have or should have, certainly if they're beyond a certain size, committees that deals with audit or compensation and this sort of thing, which are also formal. But I also like when you have strong boards with strong resources, you have sort of more task force oriented groups that work much more dynamic than the board itself on strategic issues where you want to move fast. Could be recruitment, could be a go-to-market for some new market or whatever you think is sort of the board can help if it works dynamically. And this is much more ad hoc work that's not scheduled around board meetings. And I oftentimes have seen the biggest value being in those sorts of activities.
Yeah. It's most of it, I think, is, of course, strategy and anything related to capital. If you're issuing more capital, how to re-up the employee CEOs. But there is no, I think what you're saying is it depends on the company, how fast it's growing, I would say capital, and also whenever the risk is changing. If you're taking more risk for shareholders, then you should seek counsel from the board members. In the Nordics, is it common to have CEO and chairperson same, or they're separate? In the US, in the startup world, it's common that the CEO and chairperson are the same.
It's more common in the US than here, but it's not uncommon sort of in the very early days. You know, founder, CEO, chairman is not necessarily unusual. Maybe even after the first funding round.
Okay. I think we covered why we need boards, the membership types, the role of the board. Now, shall we get into the common mistakes? And let's divide them into what you've seen the CEOs make and board members make. Let's start with the board members. What common mistakes you see board members make on the board?
Becoming too operational and sort of getting involved in day-to-day operations of the company. These are typically sort of operator board members, right?
Mm-hmm.
Board members, instead of doing, you know, thinking about the duty of loyalty and, you know, the interest of the company, they think about their own shares, right? Mm-hmm. Or the needs of the venture firm or the private financials of a founder or whatever in capacity when founders are board members. So taking, you know, the perspective, their own perspective and not the company perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spending too much time on the discussions that are not the important ones in the board room.
Mm-hmm.
Those were sort of three things from the top of my head.
Yeah. And I would add that, you know, telling the CEO what to do is another mistake I've heard from other fellow founder CEOs, because I think the common perception people have is CEO works for the board, you know, and so the board can tell the CEO what to do. I think the board is there to advise, suggest, help. But if the relationship becomes, you should do that because I'm the board member, that generally, unless it's like an illegal thing and totally red flag, you shouldn't do. But for strategy type of things, I think the board member should give counsel, advice, provide different point of view, critical thinking, than telling the CEO what to do.
I would totally agree with that. I think it's somewhat related to getting to operational part, but it's a very specific and bad version of that, yes.
Okay, now let's talk about the CEOs. What are the common mistakes you've seen them make working with the board?
So you know, the same sort of problem area in sort of not understanding the difference between the boardroom and sort of the management team meeting. And what is operations and what is strategic? Mm-hmm. So having two detailed tactical discussions in the board is definitely one. You know, I think CEOs go both ways in sort of either underplaying or overplaying the board. One is that the CEO's job is to run the company day to day. And you cannot go into a board meeting and just say, I was thinking this or thinking that. I don't know. What do you think? You have to come in, you know, having a position and guide and run your board. And the other way, you cannot go in and overpower your board in the sense that you're not willing to listen and also bring the things you should bring to the board for a real decision point. And I think the good CEOs sort of work with the board before the point of decision to get things right, but guide the board, but yet get input. I think that's, finding that balance is something sometimes wrong.
Yeah, I would add is you don't have to, especially when you're a first time or new entrepreneur, and you may have, let's say, some heavy name or big name on your board. So you don't have to do what they say. More than anybody else on the ground or what's happening with the product, with customers, with market. Take everything as input and not directive, and then explain the decision you make back. Okay, you heard these inputs and this is what you're planning to do, and this is why. I see a mistake I've seen is, especially the newer entrepreneurs, they go, well, the board said we should do this, so we are doing this. That's not the right way of working with the board.
I would agree. Yeah. There are also some additional things that I typically see, and they might not be related to like the workings of a specific constituent of the board, but it's just that boardrooms, and this is a tendency slightly more in the Nordics than in the US, fill up too quickly and the board gets too big. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to take out things than not fill it up, right? So if you don't think, I would supplement, the connections or competence or something, possibly through advisory board or consultants or something like that, rather than fill it up if it's not the right quality individual for the long term of the company. Now, you don't have to have a board member, forever, but it just tends to be hard to change a lot, and particularly if they represent a specific angle. So don't give, as a founder, don't give investors too many board seats either, right? So that's filling it up. And also getting not be picky enough about the skill sets you get in there, because it The discussions don't get to be of a higher quality than the quality of the resources around the table.
Mm-hmm. What's the right size, Arne, in your view of the board? Is it 5 members, 7? What's the right size?
It depends as the company grows, but I think like you want a seed board should be 3 people. Mm-hmm. A Series A board is maybe 5.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, try to not increase it, even if it will happen. Mm-hmm. But be stingy, right? Mm-hmm. And be sure it's the right mix. So maybe 6, maybe 7 as you grow, but you know, don't have inflation.
Yeah. And is there a right mix you found? Like, you know, 1, 2 management, 3 investors, 2 independents. Like, is there a right mix?
Balance is the point, right? You know, sometimes the board is essentially, you know, a place to argue about control of the company. That tends to be dysfunctional, but nevertheless, sometimes that becomes the case, right? And typically, if the balance is such that independents are on the balancing point, then generally better decisions are being made for the company. But of course that warrants high quality independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was very insightful. Thanks for sharing, Arne. I hope the entrepreneurs listening to us and board members found this insightful as well.
Well, thanks for the discussion.
Yeah, so we'll see you in 2 weeks. Hopefully you're getting vaccinated and life is somewhat getting back to normal wherever you are. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.